Ljubljana, Bratislava, Amsterdam, Warsaw, Bucharest. A very warm welcome to another edition of Network Europe. Coming up on the program this week, China feels the heat of the Olympic flame.
A few Tibetans in Olympia today managed to disrupt and spoil the Chinese government's torch relay launch. And the Chinese government should take it as a warning that until China leaves Tibet, the Tibetans and our supporters will never allow them a moment of rest, let alone any moment of glory.
The European Parliament debates the possibility of an Olympic boycott, how garbage is causing a stink in Italian elections, and do babies and toddlers care about radio? In Poland, it seems they do.
Baby radio.
Baby radio.
Baby radio.
All those stories, plus our quiz winners coming up on Network Europe, a partnership of Europe's leading broadcasters. I'm Barbara Gruber in Bonn, Germany. The Olympic torch has begun its long journey from its spiritual home in southern Greece to Beijing for this summer's Olympic Games. Tibetan activists have, however, threatened to harry and harass the torch as it's carried around the world. This week, they disrupted the ceremony to light the flame at ancient Olympia, causing a huge embarrassment both to Greece and China. Deutsche Welle's Malcolm Brabant reports.
A handful of Tibetans and their supporters made a mockery of a huge security operation staged jointly by the Greeks and their Chinese guests. Protesters linked to the Paris-based group Reporters Without Borders unfurled a banner and yelled pro-Tibetan slogans as Liu Qi, China's chief representative, was making his set-piece address in the spiritual home of the Olympic Games. Eyewitnesses say the demonstrators were beaten by Greek police who hustled them away. After seeing the torch-lighting ceremony hijacked, Jacques Rogge, head of the International Olympic Committee, was forced to defend giving the Games to Beijing.
The Beijing Games will not only be a moment of sporting excellence, but also an opportunity for the people of China and the world to learn, discover, and respect each other.
The anti-Chinese demonstrations continued outside the ancient stadium. A Tibetan woman covered herself in mock blood and threw herself into the path of the torch procession through the streets of ancient Olympia. She and a colleague were roughed up by Greek security.
Stop killing in Tibet! No torch in Tibet! Stop killing in Tibet!
Why did you beat me? Why did you beat me?
I'm allowed to say what in Tibet is going on. This was supposed to be the first of many glorious days for China. Instead, the spotlight was shone on Tibet like never before. Tendon Dorji is deputy director of the Free Tibet Students Movement, and he was one of those arrested and later released by the Greek police.
I think it's a very bittersweet moment for me right now, because a few Tibetans in Olympia today managed to disrupt and spoil the Chinese government's party torch relay launch. And the Chinese government should take it as a warning and a message that until and unless China leaves Tibet, the Tibetans and our supporters will never allow them a moment of rest, let alone any moment of glory. And to begin with, the IOC and the Chinese government both should make the first gesture of respect to the Tibetan people by stopping the torch from going through Tibet.
There was a surreal moment at one of the dress rehearsals for the lighting ceremony. An actress dressed as a priestess clutched a dove of peace in her hands and threw it skywards to enable it to take flight. But the bird resolutely flopped to the ground and went for a determined long walk. For superstitious Chinese, not a good omen. Malcolm Brabant, Radio Deutsche Welle, Ancient Olympia.
As we just heard, the French media watchdog Reporters Without Borders sent three people to Olympia in Greece to disrupt the torch-lighting ceremony. Vincent Brossel was one of the Reporters Without Borders activists who disrupted the ceremony and was later arrested. He was released on parole and returned to France, where he spoke to RFI's Jan van der Made.
We started this demonstration during the speech of Liu Qi with the president of the BOCOG, the organizing committee of Beijing 2008, and he's also a leading member of the Chinese Communist Party. And he was attending this ceremony, and when he started to speak, we went out with a flag. And on this flag, you can find our campaign related to the Olympic Games in Beijing, what is mainly the Olympic rings transformed into handcuffs, to show that the Olympic Games are prepared in a sort of repressive environment and that we denounce the fact that there is no improvement of human rights situation.
But what do Tibetans themselves think of this action? I went to the office of Tibet in Paris and asked the representative of the Dalai Lama to France, Mr. Wangku Beshi.
NGOs, they're free to do what they like. When these people are staging manifestations, suppose, for example, during the opening of the Olympic torch in Greece, they're not doing this out of happiness. It is not a kind of holiday. They're doing this because they are very much tired. They're very much feeling about the absence of justice, absence of international communities listening to the peaceful people.
More and more people concerned about the human rights situation in Tibet are calling for a boycott of the Olympic Games. But do the NGOs want to go that far? Vincent Brossel again.
We are not in favor of the boycott, but we really need an international support, not only from the public opinion, the citizens or the NGOs, but from the governments, to put pressure on the Chinese government to get real improvements before the Games.
Initially, the French government was not very committed to speak out.
The French reactions actually have been, in the beginning, very confused, because the European Union, and especially the country like United Kingdom and United States, and Germany have been very, even Poland has been very courageous, because they stated very clearly that China must listen to the Dalai Lama and his peace approach, which is there for many years now. So in the beginning, the French position has been very invisible. We cannot see it. We don't understand actually why the French side has acted in such a poor manner. But gradually, I think they understood the position of other countries, but also the situation, the grave situation going on in Tibet, the violence of the Chinese forces and authorities, but also the spontaneous manifestations from the French public.
We feel that at least this demonstration in Olympia has obliged many people to think twice before saying, yes, I will be in Beijing in August 8th, to put the foreign government in front of their responsibility. They cannot say, I will be in Beijing anyway on August 8th. So we ask Mr. Sarkozy to suspend his participation to the opening ceremony, waiting to get improvements. Of course, we were satisfied by his change of tone, and we feel that France can be a leading country because they will be at the head of the European Union in August.
Some important guests already said they won't attend the opening ceremony, one of them being the Prince of Wales. Director Steven Spielberg, too, has announced he won't be available to orchestrate the opening ceremony, to the dismay of the Beijing Olympic Committee, which calls all these actions meddling and interference. The question remains if all the actions, boycotts, partial boycotts or other activities disrupting the games won't backfire, so that in the end the Tibetan people themselves pay the price. For Network Europe, this is Jan van der Made reporting from Paris.
More and more European leaders have sharpened their tone over Tibet this week. Belgian Deputy Prime Minister Didier Reynders said he would not rule out a boycott if the situation in Tibet worsens. And French President Nicolas Sarkozy did the same. Meanwhile, the head of the European Parliament invited the Dalai Lama to address EU lawmakers on the situation in Tibet, and he also raised the option of boycotting the opening ceremony. I spoke to Marco Cappato, an Italian Liberal Democrat member of the European Parliament.
There are many different positions within the parliament. There are some that are calling for a boycott, some others that are saying that is an important occasion to improve the relationship with China. I think that the point of reference for all of us is the position and the words of the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama is not calling for the boycott of the Olympics game. So I think we have to make the difference between the games and the opening ceremony. The president of the European Parliament, Hans-Gert Pöttering, took a bold position questioning the idea of being present at the opening ceremony. And I think that Xavier Solana, as representative of European foreign politics, should have waited and should wait for the European Parliament to make its view. We will pass a resolution in a couple of weeks' time, and also to European government debating. And it would be of tremendous importance to have a common European position on that.
Do you personally think a boycott of the opening ceremony is a good idea? And if so, what difference or what could you achieve with such a boycott?
I think we should listen very carefully what the Dalai Lama is saying on all the issue of Tibet, because Dalai Lama is talking about non-violence, which is a fundamental point. He's talking about autonomy, not calling for independence, but a real true autonomy. And on this basis, dialogue with China should be, and Europe should ask for resume it. But the opening ceremony, I also think it could be a good sign to at least to say now that the participation and the presence of politicians at that ceremony, it will be conditioned to concrete improvement. And by now we did not have concrete improvement for the situation in China and in Tibet. I'm saying in China because it's also about Uyghurs, Falun Gong, Mongols and so on. So I think we should leave the door open with the real conditioning of being present or not, and if the situation remain as it is now, we should not have political leaders from Europe present at the Games.
Can you look upon it in this way? Had China not gotten the Games, would human rights and the problems in Tibet have hit the news like they did?
Probably not, and this is maybe why the position of the Dalai Lama is a wise position, and it is an occasion, but we have to seize this occasion. It's not enough to say, well, it's an important occasion and opportunity, if then we don't do anything at all. So on that we have to see what Europe can do. For example, we could now, as Italian Foreign Minister D'Alema proposed, invite urgently the Dalai Lama as European Union, because there are positions from Gordon Brown, Angela Merkel, each and every Prime Minister or President or Foreign Minister is deciding to see the Dalai Lama. This is good, but we should have a common voice on that, inviting him immediately in Brussels and take this opportunity to advance the cause. You are right. Without the Olympics game, it would not have been possible to have such a huge mediatic and public opinion profile.
Now, you said inviting the Dalai Lama would be the first step that would need to be taken. In your eyes, what would be the next concrete steps?
We should immediately propose, as European Union, but also at the United Nations level, international inquiry on what happened in Tibet. The Dalai Lama said that he was available to give all the information needed to verify, for example, the allegation that the Chinese regime made about his responsibility on violent incident and so on. So we should use technologies like satellite to give images and news that the Chinese regime is impeding to coming out from Tibet. We should set clear condition upon which we would decide if to be present or not in the opening ceremony.
Finally, Mr. Capato, during the Games, what action will you very personally take? Not watch the Games? Or are you maybe going to China to protest? And what will you encourage your constituents to do or not to do?
Yes, not watch the game is not enough at all. I think we should, as politician, for example, we should put in question contracts for international broadcasting. We should help people going to the Olympics game in also making some concrete action, like bringing information, pictures. As a transnational nonviolent radical party, the organization I belong to, we are proposing a satyagraha, is the Gandhian word for a mass non-violent action like fasting, for example. So starting from the situation in Tibet, supporting the political proposal of the Dalai Lama, and of course this could also imply a physical presence before embassies, and of course non-violent action, non-violent tools, this should be used for reinforcing the fight for democracy and human rights during the Olympic Games.
Marco Cappato, member of the European Parliament, speaking to us about a possible boycott of the Chinese Olympics. Now, many people would say they hear a lot of garbage from politicians during election campaigns. But in Italy, garbage is one of the hot issues in this election campaign, especially in the southern Campania region. Although the streets of Naples have finally been cleared of their huge piles of rubbish, the problem is as bad as ever on the city's outskirts. But what's even worse is the problem of toxic industrial waste, dumped in huge quantities by the local mafia, the Camorra. Locals are falling ill, animals and crops are being poisoned, and yet no one is being held accountable. Radio Netherlands correspondent Vanessa Mock went sniffing around to investigate.
This is the heart of Campania, known for centuries as the most fertile area of Italy. And here in the small village of Castellana, not far from Naples, it's easy to see why, because there are orchards and fields stretching out all the way towards the Apennine Mountains. But it doesn't smell pretty here. In fact, it stinks. And the reason is right here by my feet. Because for about 50 metres, there's rubbish stretching out, everything from rotting food, cans, broken bottles, plastic bottles, bits of electric appliances, some car parts, even a mattress. Now, right opposite from where I'm standing, people are arriving at the local restaurant, and I can actually see them stepping over the garbage. So what's it like for them to live here?
Non si riesce nemmeno più a camminare con le macchine.
It's got so bad that we can't even drive the car in our village because the streets are so full of garbage. It's become so difficult to live here that we're trying to migrate to the north. We just can't take it anymore.
It's not just the rubbish in the street. It's all the toxic waste that's also being dumped here that's ruining our lives. We don't know where this will end. I worry for the future and for my children.
Bambini più che altro per il futuro loro.
Dove c'è la camorra succede sempre questo. Graziando il Signore.
It's because of the Camorra mafia who hold all the power here and all their cronies, the politicians. The worse it gets, the more they profit. This rubbish runs all the way from here until Naples. It simply cannot go on.
Andare avanti così.
Everyone here seems to point the finger at the local mafia, the Camorra, for this disaster on their doorstep. And federal prosecutor Donato Celier, who's made his name and is an environmental crime buster, says they're right too.
Perché a Napoli? Il fatto che la regione Campania...
For years, millions of tons of industrial waste has piled up here. The Camorra has made billions by transporting the waste from the big industries in the north and dumping it in the area. It costs businesses a tenth of what they'd have to pay if they disposed of their waste legally. It's dug underground, and when the space runs out, they just ditch it on the land. So now there's no space left anywhere for any normal household rubbish. Go and dig a hole anywhere around here, and you'll find waste underneath.
Sono arrivati per anni i rifiuti qua. Non c'è più posto per i rifiuti.
Walking through some orchards and a field, it's an area called Marigliano. I can see peach trees, apple trees, some cabbage and some lettuces being grown here. But just at the end of this field, it suddenly gets a lot uglier. There's a viaduct that runs along here, and under the viaduct there are mounds of very strange coloured, very dark, coal coloured deposits. It looks like mud, dried mud. Nunzia Lombardi, you're from a public health organisation. Can you just tell me what it is that we're looking at now?
Some big bag with the toxic rubbish, amianto, aluminio, metalli pesanti.
So aluminium, asbestos, heavy metals.
Yes, this is toxic, but it is very similar to compost. So vendono questi rifiuti come terreno vegetale.
Because it looks so similar to compost, you say, they actually sell this waste as compost.
Yes.
Onto fields.
Yes.
How is that possible?
It's possible in Italy.
It's cheaper.
Cheaper.
Pure toxic waste is put on crops and then contaminated water is used to irrigate these fields. So it's no wonder that people are falling ill. So sick that this area north of Naples is known as the Triangle of Death. Dr. Antonio Marfella explains why.
Sono stati registrati negli ultimi anni.
We've found a very sharp rise in illnesses among locals in the past years. There's a disproportionate number of tumors, way too many for such a rural area. It's because of all the toxic waste. It's seeping into the food chain and poisoning people. Many people here also suffer from thyroid problems and chronic fatigue. And there's been a sharp fall in fertility among both men and women.
Dalla diminuzione della fertilità.
Here again with Prosecutor Celje, the police say they have plenty of evidence to show who is committing these environmental crimes, and yet nobody has really been brought to justice.
Non abbiamo le leggi. Nel Parlamento sono rappresentati vari gruppi.
There are no laws for environmental crime in Italy. Time and time again, the Parliament has voted down new proposed laws. There's very powerful cross-party lobbying being done by the industrialists who save billions of euros by committing environmental crimes and want to continue doing so.
Risparmiano miliardi di euro.
The waste crisis is ruining people's health and the local economy as well. Tourism in and around the Naples region has plummeted, and the authorities here have been threatened by Brussels with fines unless they clean up this mess. But there are so many interests at stake, and this has been going on for so long, that people around here are not optimistic that the problem will be cleared up anytime soon.
Radio Netherlands' Vanessa Mock with this investigation on the garbage crisis in Italy. Terrorism experts from around the world met for a conference in Stockholm recently. The delegates covered the entire spectrum of counter-terrorism, from senior soldiers and policemen, intelligence professionals to diplomats and think tank experts. They discussed a whole range of issues. How to define the ongoing conflict? Is it a war on terror, as the US President George W. Bush has dubbed it? Or is it a global insurgency? And how to defeat such an insurgency? Radio Sweden's Azaria Kiris reports.
Scores of analysts, researchers and security experts converged on Stockholm to compare notes on developments in the fight against international terrorism and insurgency. The conference was organized by the British organization the Global Defense Forum. Mary Dabb is the organization's spokesperson.
Our intention was to do a public-private partnership and present and create a synergy between the ideas of two military think tanks to present the diversity of views to deal with what is seen as the most important problem facing the West.
News concerning terrorism and insurgency reverberates from our loudspeakers and splashes across our TV screens, laptops and newspapers. But how much do we know about what is happening and why it is happening? Analysts say clarity of thought on the underlying causes and lasting solutions to the complex problems is in short supply. Magnus Ranstorp, Research Director at the Swedish National Defence College, is a world authority on Al-Qaeda, Hamas and Hezbollah.
We're trying to understand the processes of violent radicalization, extremism, and in that sort of battle to understand the nature of the phenomena, we also need to have some guiding principles of how do we organize ourselves in grappling with this. We have to be cognizant of extremes. It's not just about Islamic extremism or Islamist extremism, but also about right-wing extremism, and they feed off each other. We have to have the right vision of what do we want to achieve, how do we achieve it, who do we speak to, how do we create credibility, how do we create trust. These are very long-term issues.
So many questions. How are politicians and governments dealing with these questions?
There are really only three countries that are really at the forefront of developing some of these measures. You have the United Kingdom, of course, in the aftermath of the strikes in 2005 that have devoted some thoughts to this. But also are significant efforts being expended in Holland. This, of course, came in the aftermath of the killing of Theo van Gogh and the controversial film Submission. It's everything from democracy-enhancing measures, it's leadership camps for youths, generational debates. Even, I think it, perhaps most innovatively, they have a bus tour with parliamentarians, imams, students and so on. You also have in Denmark, one wouldn't believe it given the current environment and current debate, but you also have significant efforts being expended trying to develop a national strategy against radicalization and extremism.
How about here at home? How is Sweden dealing with the issue?
Really, the Scandinavian formula is to develop SSP cooperation, and by SSP I mean schools, social services and police, in building resilience, in building dialogue, in building sort of a communication as to how do you minimize, once you see sort of extremism in the midst, how do you develop measures and initiatives.
So how do you do that? What form should the fight against terrorism take?
My name is Gijs de Vries. I've been the European Union's counter-terrorism coordinator for the past 3 years. There are two things we need to get right in preventing and combating terrorism. First, of course, it's the work of intelligence services, police services and prosecution, if you wish, the law and order side, stopping those who wish to attack our society today or tomorrow. But secondly, and in parallel, we need to work on a political strategy to address the motivation of those who support the terrorists. In other words, we need to reduce the pull on which terrorists draw, and we need to drive a wedge between the extremists on the one hand, which we must put in jail, and the broad majority of Muslims worldwide who abhor violence, who reject terrorism in the name of Islam, and who want to live under democratic and rule and in free societies.
Radio Sweden's Azaria Kiris reporting on this recent anti-terrorism conference in Stockholm. In eastern Slovakia, newborn babies are hooked up to headphones for music therapy to counter the trauma of birth. Now their Polish neighbors are taking things one step further. A group of radio enthusiasts has launched a new station to cater to the needs of the youngest radio audience, babies, toddlers and small children. Joanna Neifeld from the Polish Radio's external service tuned in to Baby Radio.
What kind of media content it is safe to expose your children to is a dilemma of many a parent.
We and our husband prefer to carefully choose what is appropriate for our children. Usually in the morning there are much more interesting films and programs for children than in the evening. So we record the most interesting stuff and then our children can watch it in the most convenient time of the day. We especially look for an attractive form, good content without violence, something educational, something nice, something that could be a good example for our children.
A group of radio enthusiasts from Poznan, Western Poland, came up with an idea that may be the answer to this mother's expectations.
Baby Radio.
Baby Radio. Fajne Radio.
Babyradio.pl broadcasts to children up to 7 years of age. The transmission consists of children's music, mainly Polish, but also classical masterpieces, fairy tales, bedtime stories and lullabies. The program is supposed to foster the development of kids. It is perfectly suited to the child's daily rhythm because it is run by experienced parents, radio people, who came up with the idea of baby radio. Piotr Zamojcin is one of the pioneers.
The idea appeared in heads of two fathers. It was my friend and me, and we involved our wives. We are a group of people who work in the biggest radio groups in Poland, and we decided to start something own. And there was a lack of stations like this on radio market in Poland.
And so the parents started to work on the schedule. They already had a lot of good content at hand because they had been playing music and good stories to their kids before the idea first came to their minds. So the radio is actually tested on their own kids, continues Piotr Zamojcin.
When the first time it appeared in our heads, it was because we were trying to grow our children with music, with some short stories. And our children were listening to CDs, and some idea appeared Why not do it for many people if our children become better listening to the great music, the music specially made for them? And this is why we are talking that it is tested on children. Our children passed this test.
The kids love Baby Radio, and so do parents. The idea seems to be catching on splendidly, with more and more families tuning in to feed the youngest with some valuable and entertaining content. The creators of Baby Radio have ambitious plans for the future. They would like to involve more experts in child psychology and education, but obviously all the upgrades require money. Piotr Zamoychin again.
Now we are a product completely out of commercials. We treat it as our investment for the future. But we are thinking that we will have to have commercials in the future because, you know, everything costs, from the broadcasting to royalties for something we are using in our program.
It took over a year to construct an optimal schedule with programs and music and finally launch the project. To test the final product, go to babyradio.pl.
Fajna piosenka, fajne radio.
Baby Radio.
Joanna Neufeld from the Polish Radio's external service with this report on Baby Radio. And that's almost all we have time for. But before we go, here's the answer to our March quiz. This month we were looking for a French film producer and director, and we gave you several hints, including film scenes from the films Subway and Nikita.
T'es vraiment très con. J'ai les clés, putain!
And our mystery man is, of course, Luc Besson. We've had many correct answers, but here are the five winners we drew. Keith Wickstrom from Dallas, USA, Ralf Urbanschik from Eisleben, Germany, Suat Zikrani from Casablanca, Morocco, Li Xuwei from Manshan, China, and Hans-Werner Lollek from Nakskov, Denmark. Congratulations to you all. This week I leave you with Madonna and Love Profusion. Luc Besson directed and produced this music video in 2003. We'll be back next week with our colleagues from Radio Netherlands. On behalf of the entire Network Europe team, I'm Barbara Gruber saying thanks for tuning in.
There are too many questions. There is not one solution. There is no resurrection. There is so much confusion. And the love profusion. You make me feel. There are too many options. There is no consolation. I have lost my illusions. What I want is an explanation. And the love profusion. You make me feel. You make me know. And the love direction. You make me feel. Under my skin, I got you. Under my skin, I got you. Under my skin, I got you. Under my skin, there is no comprehension. There is real isolation. There is so much destruction. What I want is a celebration. And I know. Under my skin, I got you. Under my skin, I got you. Under my skin, I got you. Under my skin.